hoped he would not look closely enough to know the difference. The curse, too, meant he could sleep for hours and hours and still wake with the faint itch of exhaustion under his skin. Outside, the sky darkened in increments, like an obsidian blade lowering over Oblia's pale throat. The sound of footsteps, quick and light, on the wooden threshold. I turned around. My sister Undine stood in the doorway.
Dear Marlinchen, no one will believe we're anything but witches if you don't put a comb through your hair.
A flush crawled over my cheeks. I left my bed and sat down at my boudoir, scrutinizing my face in the mirror. My sallow cheeks now bore two splotches of red. My hair was a mess of coils that fell as heavy as a quilt over my shoulders.
I don't know what to do, I said. It's too long.
All of our hair was too long, and far too long for the current fashion. Those slim curls like rolled tobacco that the other women in Oblia sported. Our father would not let us cut even an inch. The clients, he said, liked that there was something charmingly rustic about us. Our untrimmed hair, the relic of an older, simpler time. To them, we might be sweet singing milkmaids, torn right out of some wealthy man's pale pastoral wallpaper. I did not have a dulcet singing voice, but I smiled at our clients as sweetly as I could.
Rose, Undine called softly, come here and help quickly.
My second sister swept through the threshold in a crinoline gown, her bared shoulders as sharp as kitchen knives. She took in my hair and Undine's angrily flared nostrils and sighed. Our mother's ivory-handled comb lay on our bureau, a bit of my dark blonde hair snarled in its teeth. But Rose, being the second sister, was gentler. She began to work through my curls with the comb. The last time anyone had done so was my mother, and that was years ago. Rose managed to tie up my hair with a ribbon, in some butchered emulation of the Oblian women's hair. The pink silk ribbon matched my dress, a crinkled cranberry with a neckline low enough to make me blush. Not that it mattered very much. Pinned between my beautiful sisters, I was little more than a piece of furniture, a particularly elaborate candle stand. The clock gonged 10, and then we were off. Through the garden, the damp soil sucking at our shoes. Arm in arm, we picked our way past the scrying pool, as bright as a tossed coin. Through the thistles with their purple buds, careful to bypass Rose's delicate meshwork of baby's breath and feverfew. The flowering pear tree coughed white petals at us, but all the monsters were cowed or slumbering. Still, we were quiet. We could not risk waking them, or worse, waking our father. We had risked tiny rebellions before, or at least Rose and Undine had, but never something so large and illicit and wrong. This rebellion was like a book with all its pages torn out. I did not know its beginning, middle, or end. The thought of Papa seeing us made me woozy with dread. And our very own garden began to feel terrible and strange. To outsiders, it was always terrible and strange, even in the daylight. They were not accustomed to it the way we were. There were the glass apples, which tasted sweet and made you wine-flushed, if you could bear to put those hard, sharp bits in your mouth. There were the black amber plums, fat as bruises, which were suffused with a fatal poison. Our father had nurtured an immunity in his daughters by feeding us slivers of the fruit from the time we were infants. And now we could bite into the plums and taste only the tang of their rotted bitterness, not the poison underneath. But even we were warned never to touch the juniper tree, which bore berries of the most dangerous variety. Both poisonous and sweet. Whatever sick thing was in them, we could not be inured to it. In my 23 years,